Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
It's about that time. We hope you got that popcorn ready because you're once again in the war room. We're a distinguished starting five, but we're playing with four tonight, like that scene in Hoosiers when Gene Hackman couldn't let the gunning dude back into the game. I'm Devin, and I'm here with B. Austin, PJ, and Jimmy. Akil has the evening off, but we got a very interesting show for you tonight. We'll discuss the stories from the wild week of the NFL and discuss some NBA storylines as well. We'll recap the boxing match from this past weekend, if that's what you want to call it, and preview the UFC 123 this coming weekend. In our What Sports Got to Do With It segment, we'll discuss our thoughts on filmmaker Tyler Perry. Then later in the second hour, we'll welcome former Playboy bunny DeVita Sullivan to join our conversation on the hot-button issue of homosexuality in the locker room. We'd like to hear your opinions on tonight's serious topics, so call in when we open up the phone lines. That number is 323-410-0012. So before we get it popping, we'd like to give a shout-out to our Hump Day brothers and sisters. Check out our homies Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Wednesday at 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. At 7, switch on over to Ball Control Radio to hear the first ladies of sports, Danny and Mel. Also, War Room Sports has been chosen as the official sports contributor to RRHipHop.com. So check them out at that address, which is RRHipHop.com, or check them out on Twitter at RRRHipHop. But right now, my man Jimmy's going to take us into these birthdays.
My birthday, yay!
Let's go. Let's go. All right. First birthday this week is one Harold Warren Moon. Dev, what you got on Mr. Harold Warren Moon?
Greatest African-American quarterback of all time, Warren Moon.
Totally co-sign that. Warren Moon is the greatest Afro-American quarterback to ever play football. B. Austin, what's your opinion on one Warren Moon?
Man, Warren the man Moon. He ruled Canada as if he had ran up there on the Underground Railroad. Then he came back down when they allowed blacks to play quarterback. Now, I can understand how people under 25 can be fooled by what's going on with quarterbacks today. But if you over 25, you have no excuse to celebrate Donovan McNabb, David Garrard, and all these other bums that play quarterback. Warren Moon with that ball.
Yeah, real talk. Real talk. I agree with that. Warren Moon was, in fact, that ball. Next birthday we got is Gary Antonian Sheffield, the baseball player. Dev, what you got on that?
Yo, Gizan Antonian. Yo.
Yo,
when I think of Gary Sheffield, the only thing comes to mind is, yo, the dude's facial expression. He always played like he was about to steal somebody.
He was very angry. It might have been them PEDs that got him that angry, because my man, was one of them PEDs. B. Austin, what you got on one Gary Antonian Sheffield?
Yo, black mothers and fathers are creative, whether it comes in the first name, the middle name, or the last.
My man name is Antonian. All right, the next birthday, I know Brad gonna like this, is one of his favorite personal players. But, you know, this birthday is for one Samuel James Cassell, a.k.a. Sam I Am, a.k.a. Sam Cassell.
My birthday, yay!
Yo, Sam Cassell is still the nicest guard affiliated with the Washington Wizards. I don't care what none of y'all say. And shout out to everybody ugly in the world. You can do it too. Yo, as good of a player he was, mid-range game and all that stuff, you can only think of one thing when you think of Sam Cassell. Go ahead, Jimmy.
What's that?
You don't.
Yo.
Do you think you look more like E.T. or Gollum?
Am I supposed to get mad about that? Am I supposed to get mad about that?
Sam, you are awesome. Thank you.
Yo, Adam Bowe straight asking that, yo. But, yo, real talk, on a serious note, yo, Sam Cassell had major game. Yo, he was the last of a dying breed. He had a mid-range game, yo, and he used to post up. Yo, guards don't even post up no more. My man used to, yo, get you in the post and hit you with the bank, yo. But real talk, that was not an attractive young man.
Ramon could learn a lot from Sam if he just don't look at his face, man. And that's my problem.
Yo, no rainbow. But real quick to the war room out there. All three of us actually went to the Washington Wizards practice, and Sam Cassell is an assistant coach, and he was out there giving out work even to the first pick of the draft, John Wall. Sam still got game to this day. But anyway, happy birthday to Sam Cassell. Let's move on to the next birthday, which is Jason Chandler Williams, a.k.a. White Chocolate. Dad, what you got on
Yay!
White Chocolate?
Yo, dude, it was fun to watch when he first came into the league. You know, he used to come in doing all that black guy stuff. Round the backs, crossing people over, no look passing, gunning from three. He used to be fun to watch. He fell off a little bit, but now that he stopped with all the flashiness, he's a pretty solid backup point guard.
Yeah, I agree with that. B. Austin, what you got on Paul's?
White Chocolate was not a heady player. He was not crappy. And would he have had a job if his skin was brown with all them turnovers?
Uh-oh, here you go. You trying to say that if he was, his name would be A.O.? I'm just
joke.
Saying.
Shout out to my man A.O., man. His name would be Hot Rock.
You think A.O. better than White Chocolate?
I think they're comparable. I think A.O. needed a jump shot. His gun was broke, but he could do everything else, and he could play.
Shout out to White Chocolate. Let's move on to his last birthday of the day. Listen very closely, especially you, B. Austin, because you may get it twisted. The birthday of Jeffrey Michael Jordan. Now, that's not the Michael Jordan himself, but that's his son. Not Michael Jeffrey, but Jeffrey Michael Jordan. He turns 22.
My birthday! Yay!
Dev, what you got on Jeffrey Michael?
Trash. He tried to play because his name was Jordan. Dude, he can't play. The only son of Mike is
Damn.
Kobe Bryant.
I ain't going to diss him like that, but, yo, real talk, like, he was in a no-win situation because, you know, people out there know that I said Mike is not the GOAT, but with that being said, Mike is one of the greatest five players ever, and what could this young man do? Like, he was in a no-win situation. If you want to hoop, yo, he should have just played baseball, yo. Like, real talk. He should just played baseball.
Did you see that high school game when Eric Gordon was giving him the business? And then he looked over to his pop in the crowd and did some old Michael Jordan pose?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yo, dude was in a no-win situation. He should have, like, played, like, golf or, like, soccer or something. Be awesome. What you got?
Yo, man, Mike got one son, and he's Kobe Bryant, man. Stop playing.
I heard that.
Right.
Anyway, that's enough for the birthdays. Tell us what happened while we were on the grind.
Will do. I'm going to let everybody know what happened today and the other days of the week when y'all were on the grind. All right, as y'all probably heard, Eva Longoria files for divorce. The Desperate Housewives star filed for divorce from her 3-year marriage to Spurs point guard Tony Parker, citing irreconcilable differences. There are rumors that Eva found several text messages sent to Tony's alleged mistress, Erin Berry, wife of his former teammate, Brent Berry. What's up with that?
Yo, he violated on so many levels, yo. Like, yo, your teammate, though, fam.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All the nana out there, and you got to go after your teammate.
Yeah,
and then one, like, you know, my thing is with these athletes, why even get married?
I think Brent Berry probably looking for the dude right now. You got anything on this, Austin?
They getting divorced over text messages? It must have been picture mail.
I think it's a little more evidence. I get my news from TMZ. They the most trusted news source in America. Anyway, Mississippi State booster has text evidence. Everybody's getting in trouble on the text messages. They have text evidence of Cam Newton's pop asking for money. This is right up Jimmy's alley because he did his pass the rock on this last week. The Mississippi State booster, Bill Bell, told the NCAA that he received text messages from a man claiming to represent Cecil Newton that outlined a payment plan that would bring Cam Newton to the school. Now, peep this. The text included a request for $80,000 the day after Cam signed, $50,000 30 days later, and another $50,000 30 days after that. What's up with the good Reverend Newton, man?
Yo, all I know is they was grinding, yo, because think about it this way. How many schools did they approach and get that same bread from? Because if they say they go to the U and say, yo, we need this bread, and they give them the bread, but then they don't sign, like, what is the U going to do? Like, I mean, so they could have stuck a couple people up. Yo,
exactly.
they were basically grinding.
They were looking for the highest bidder.
And my question is, how much was Mike Vick getting? Because Mike Vick was an awesome, like, college athlete. Like, you know, I think about all of the great college athletes. What kind of bread was they making?
Yeah.
I've often said that, you know, if I could get my game together and get my pimp game on and my rap game right, I could be a reverend, man. I can do it.
Wow. So you taking a shot at the good old Dr. Reverend?
Yeah, man. Reverends, the reverends and the preaching men getting money, and I can only think back to the scripture where Jesus threw the scribes, Pharisees, and money changers out of the temple. But we done forgot that passage in today's society.
We're dropping that heat on people right now. Let's move on to the next one. I'm confused. Your man, Mr. Glass, Greg Oden, out for the season again. If y'all didn't hear, former number one draft pick Greg Oden, a.k.a. Mr. Glass, is what we call him here in the war room, whose NBA career has never really gotten started due to a rash of injuries, will undergo his second microfracture surgery within, 3 years? And he's going to miss the season again. So since being drafted number one in the 07 draft, he's only played in 82 of 256 regular season games. Yeah, I think the basketball guys got serious beef with this cat, man.
Damn, homie. My thing is like, yo, I hope that now that he's injured and he's out for the season, they just don't show him on TV no more because the boy is one atrocious-looking young man, no rainbow, boy look like a combination of Mumra and, like, yo, and the Crypt Keeper, yo. So I just hope they don't have to show him on TV no more, and I hope that he stays out of trouble and gets off of Twitter sending pictures of his junk to young ladies.
Austin, what's up with your man knees, man?
He need to file that Steve Austin plan, man. Get them $6 million man knees. All jokes aside, really, I feel bad because I actually like the dude. Pause. Like, got a nice sense of humor, plays defense with a high level of intensity, and really seems like he loves the game, man.
Yeah. I mean, if you didn't love the game, you wouldn't keep coming back. You know what I'm saying?
He's getting
paid to rehab at this point.
Yeah, basically. But his contract is up this year, so he's in a bad situation because he never really got a chance to prove what he could do.
I hope he saves some bread.
Moving on.
He can get a minimum contract if Joel Anthony can get a run.
Oh, he will.
Yo, Joel Anthony shoots airball dunks, so he may get a run. Would you sign him if you were a GM?
Yo, that video that you posted last night of this dude shooting an airball dunk was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life, man. I almost died
at
the computer last night.
But real quick, y'all, would y'all take a chance on him if you were a GM?
Greg Oden for minimum.
Because my question is, can he get a veteran's minimum because he's not a veteran?
Yo, he might still be eligible for Rookie of the Year.
Yo.
No, but really, if you could pay him the minimum, I'd take a chance on him. I take a chance on him. There's a lot of dudes worse than him with bad knees. So, moving on to the last story. The boy B-Hop, he thinks Manny would have trouble with black fighters. Bernard Hopkins basically said that Floyd Mayweather would beat Manny Pacquiao because the style of black fighters from the inner cities or the streets would be successful against him. What y'all think about that?
Yo, real quick, shout out to B-Hop. That's the homie. But, you know, I think Floyd will beat him, but I don't think it has anything to do with race. Because if you see where Pacquiao comes from, they fighting just to eat. But at the same time, I think it's just because Floyd is like the greatest defensive fighter I've ever seen. I don't think it'd be an exciting fight, but I think Floyd may take him just upon skill. But in terms of the race, I don't know if I agree with that.
Brad, shout out to the executioner. I think that it's the official position of the war room that we all love, B-Hop, no homo.
No doubt.
However, what does race have to do with anything in terms of him fighting? I mean, Hop, come on, man.
You know, I read the article, though. He was saying stuff like, you know, Manny, it seems like they kind of handpicked fighters for him who are going to stand toe-to-toe with him, and that's not how you beat Manny. He was saying, like, the movement of black fighters and stuff like that may give him problems because when he's throwing 5 and 6 punches at a time, he said, you know, Floyd is going to pot shot him in between those shots and set him up for later. So, you know, that the headlines, they hit you with the shock value of the headlines. But he
actually
went into more depth about what he was talking about. And I kind of see that. Like, they do set Pacquiao up with a lot of fights where he's fighting opponents who like to just stand in the middle of the ring and come at you, and that's how you get beat up. That's how you get marked.
Like his last fight. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they do that. You know, that's their job to make him look good. See, that's the problem with boxing overall is the fact that a lot of these fights are just set up to make people look good and get these inflated records, but that's neither here nor there.
I think, first of all, let me say that the bull Pretty Girl Swirl, a.k.a. Floyd Mayweather, is scared.
That's still a possibility. But like Jimmy's saying, it's a lot of setups in boxing because even if the dude you're fighting is not a bum, he could be a good fighter, but if he fights a style that you're going to just eat alive and then it don't matter. But that's what happened, everybody, while y'all were on the grind.
All right, let me take it from here, Dev. Listen, War Room out there, let's do the Pass the Rock segment. And basically this segment is where we usually all start in five, but there's only four of us this week. We vent on any sports issue that we want to talk about. Is pretty much our time to get whatever we want to off our chest, no rainbow. And I'm going to start it off. I'm going to bring the ball up today, you know, because I got some things to get off my chest. War Room World, this is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. Spike Tarantino, coming to you. And this week I want to talk about people not being able to separate a person off the field, court, golf course, or wherever they display their talent, from an athlete who displays greatness. Now, let me break down what I mean by this. I thought about this due to several recent conversations I've had. The first was in reference to one Kobe Bean Bryant. I was talking to someone about how Kobe was a great player, not only now, but an all-time great. They looked at me with an incredulous smile and told me he wasn't even a great player now, so how could he be an all-time great? When I asked them why they felt that way, they started to tell me about how he was arrogant, he snitched on Shaq, he violated a young woman in Colorado, and a bunch of other sanctimonious garbage that I always hear. When talking about Kobe, you know, people always come up with this nonsense. Basically, when talking about Kobe, people invariably give the same response to why he isn't great. So I'm not surprised at this point when I hear that. Here's the next thing happened. While I was watching the NFL Network, they were ranking the top 100 players of all time, and it came down to one Orenthal James Simpson, that is, O.J. Simpson. When they were talking about him, the gentleman who was going over his highlights admitted that O.J.'s off-the-field issues affected where he was ranked on this list. Now, I don't know whether or not O.J. committed those heinous acts, but at the same time, I know he was a beast at running back. For those that have seen the highlights, you can remember O.J. was a great player, but nonetheless, they said because of what happened off the field, it messed up his ranking. The third incident was when Mike Vick went out on Monday night and committed heinous acts of his own, but it was on the Redskins' defense. After his historic performance, when talking about the game with some people, they started telling me about how he was a murderer, a criminal, a disgrace, and a bunch of other nonsense I won't repeat. Yes, Michael Vick has made mistakes, but he paid his debt and moved on, so why don't people do the same? I mean, that really bothered me. There are countless other incidents such as the ones I've just mentioned, but these three incidents made me realize that people are basically stupid. That's right, I said it. People are idiots for the most part and have no life of their own, so they sit around and hold others to a higher moral standard than they do themselves. I know it is difficult to separate the person from their craft, and I'm not asking people to be myopic when looking at an athlete, but don't be so stupid that you diminish their achievements because of their mistakes away from their sport. As long as these mistakes don't affect their game like one Eldrick Tiger Woods, then don't let it affect your opinion when judging them as athletes. What's next? Will we start to look at the sartorial dichotomy of an athlete's clothing and say they're not great because of it? Because if it starts there, you know, there's a caliclate of athletes that I go to say, look, they went from being great to trash truck because of that. Because the bottom line is, it's all about what they do on the field, not what they do off the field. So my point is this, appreciate the athletes for what they do in sport and make sure you have a life of your own so you don't have to worry about what these Richard heads do in their off time. And I'm nice, and I'm done. With that, I want to pass the rock. B. Austin, are you open?
I'm always open. I'm always open.
Take the rock, Mr. B. Austin.
Great points, man. Great, great points. I find that objectivity is the order of the day, and not enough people are picking it off of the menu. So we have to serve it to them.
I agree.
On November 15th, 2010, at approximately 8:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the bludgeoning began. We witnessed an onslaught the likes of which the NFL had never witnessed as the Eagles employed two Olympic sprinters at the X and Z receiver and one decathlete at the QB position. Smack after smack, punch after punch, kick after kick, choke slam after choke slam, it can only be likened to soap dropping shower play in a straight man's worst prison break episode nightmare. This wasn't a beating. This was emasculation on the football field. But where did it all begin? As an Eagles fan, I'd like to thank four players distinctly that were playing for us that night, although they may not have known it. Number one, always, is Donovan McNabb. You guys out there in War Room World seem to love him. I'd like to thank you, Donovan. You tried to give us the first game, but we didn't have it together to enjoy that prized classic performance of 125 yards passing, one pick on 10 attempts. So, what did you do? Just give us the ball three times, and before the ink was dry on your new Daniel Snyder-approved contract, we had a victory. Thanks, Donnie Mac. Cowardice can work out for us Eagles as long as you're on the opposing team. Good looking out. Next, let's go to Albert Haynesworth. You could be Reggie White. Instead, you imitate Steve Ettman. You could be Clyde Simmons, but you study Mike Mamola. You could be Warren Sapp. Instead, you're the D-line's version of Brian Bosworth. And to top it off, you laid on the ground during a play in front of millions and did the worm before you went to sleep and took a nap. Thanks, Albert. We appreciate that. My third player is D'Angelo Hall. First of all, your name is D'Angelo. F-O-H. Secondly, you're another workout specimen. Pause. 4-2-40 coming into the league, tremendous short shuttle, excellent vertical leap. In a land of men, you're a teenager when it comes to technique and mental capacity. You're a mental midget, Exhibit A. I've noticed whether you have safety help or not, you're jumping the route. In the NFL, that equals death by touchdown. You're a looky-loo, always with your eyes firmly focused on the men in the backfield, praying for an opportunity to high-step and imitate your hero, Deion Sanders. Well, my friend, you're no Deion. You're not even Terrell Buckley. And can you decide whether you're hard with the plethora of prison tattoos or a fancy man with the suits, ties, perpetual shape-up, and lip gloss? Homo thug. Should have known sooner. D'Angelo, your clique stays in jail like Robert Downey Jr. Why taunt and make light of a concussion, something all players go through? What D-Dax had, you could have easily had, or you could easily have at some point this season. Why not respect the fact that he's back on the field to compete? And then you give up three touchdowns. Yo, good looking out, D'Angelo Hall. We Eagles fans appreciate it. My last guy is LaRon Landry. What can we say about this guy? Another specimen of an athlete. Pause. His workout numbers are astounding, and when put in a position to attack and not read, think, react, he can be a very good player. However, No one has ever criticized him for his overabundance of analysis in any situation, nor has his sportsmanship been a shining beacon among players in the league. He and fellow secondary mate D'Angelo Hall, whom I just critiqued a few moments ago, they decided that it would be cool to taunt D-Jax and make fun of him for suffering from a concussion, saying that they were going to put him to sleep again. Come on, dude. That could just have easily been you. Bad taste, my man, bad taste. And then let's get to the crux of the matter. While the Eagles are engaged in taking the Washington Foreskins' humanity, soul, and fortunes away from them, you decide it's a good idea to spit on an opposing player. What's lower? I mean, listen, I know you got a reputation as a tough guy. You even got suicide mission added across your chest, no homo, and all. But that spitting on another human being, Shatner, I ain't saying that I'm tough, really, but it's about who sees who first, homie. As a man, that's right up there with the highest level of disdain, man. So, again, I'd like to take the time to sing a little ditty in appreciation for all that D.C. did for Philly on Monday night in front of the world. And it goes like this. Fail to the Deadskins. Fail for on the warpath. Losing for old D.C. Humble, pick, we're sore. We don't want any more. Beat up. Drop us. Interception. Let the points and Eagles soar. Get down, lay down, till they have won. Daughters of Washington. Rah, rah, rah. Fail to the Foreskins. Fail in defeat. Frauds on the warpath. Lose for old D.C.
Yo.
Let me pass the rock. Go ahead and dunk it.
Yo, you're crazy, cuz. That's all I want to let. I just want to tell you you're crazy. But that was a butt whooping. It definitely was a butt whooping that they took. All right, I'm up. As most of you know, earlier in the season, I went on record as a proponent for allowing Kevin Cobb to play, mainly because that was the Eagles' original plan and because I don't think one should lose his job to injury. So I would like to address several people who have been texting me, emailing me, calling me, speaking to me indirectly through childish and cowardly means, etc., in feeble attempts to quote-unquote call me out due to Mike Vick's recent success. First, allow me to start with this. I'm an Eagles fan, you idiots. This situation is a win-win for me, and I root emphatically for whoever is under center wearing the green helmet with silver wings. Now that we got what should be obvious to even moderately retarded people out of the way, let's get to the point for those who either choose not to listen to the other side in the debate or have staggeringly weak comprehension skills altogether. Stop misquoting me. I have never in my 33 years of existence said that Kevin Cobb was better than anybody, let alone Mike Vick. Such language would be impossible to use, being as though I knew nothing about Cobb at the time. If you think you can quote me saying as such, verbally or in writing, I challenge you to produce this audio or this documentation. As a matter of fact, when I spoke of Kevin Cobb, I've always used language such as, quote, let's see what we have so we can make a decision for the future. Quote, if he sucks, we can get him out of here. Quote, he shouldn't lose his job after throwing 10 passes and getting injured. Quote, the Birds aren't going to the Super Bowl, so we may as well see what he can do. Etc., so forth, and so on. So if any of you have the nuts to sit here and tell me that my sentiment was any different than what I just stated, simply put, you are a lying stack of cat feces. Now on to Michael Vick. This is the same guy when in Atlanta, coach's game plan against him was to force him to pass. Force him to pass. A quarterback. If any of you can sit here and tell me that you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that Mike Vick will be playing this well at this point in the season, you, my friend, are either the Prophet Muhammad or a lying pile of cow dung. And if you tell me that Mike Vick has always been this good of a quarterback, then you're either a lying heap of horse manure, an extreme Malcolm X-level delusional black protectionist, or an excitement-loving concussion victim
who has no idea what you're watching on Sundays outside of SportsCenter. Now, with all that being said, Michael Dwayne Vick is without question bawling out of his mother-loving mind right now and absolutely deserves to be the starting quarterback for my Philadelphia Eagles. But come on, Cobb haters. Let's not front and act like Cobb isn't on the field because of anything he's not doing. If he's proven anything, he's proven that he ain't no bump. In 6 career starts, he has 3 300-plus yard games and 2 NFC Player of the Week awards. Kevin Cobb's relegation to the bench has everything to do with what Mike Vick is doing, which is play at a level that nobody has seen from him, this fact even admitted by Mike Vick himself, a level that they envisioned in Atlanta when they drafted him, but they never got. Either way you slice it, I fully reserve the right to change my mind about who should be starting if someone plays at a level that prompts a change of opinion. I'm not the type, like most of the people I'm addressing, that will stick to an argument no matter what I'm shown to the contrary, simply for the sake of being stubborn. However, let's keep in mind that Mike Vick has played all of 4 full games this season. Let's enjoy his apparent rebirth as a real quarterback without anointing him the next Steve Young or anointing the Eagles Super Bowl champion. I'll leave you all with a few questions. Why do my opinions matter so much in your lives? Why do you all allow me to rub you so much in the wrong way, no rainbow? Why are y'all thinking about me every time you watch a game? Tell them why you mad, my sons. Obviously, my mission is accomplished here. Get at me. And with that, I'm going to pass the rock to PJ so he can double-clutch monkey dunk that thing. Get him.
Woo-wee! That was some fire you just dropped there, my brother. That was nice, though. Hey, things need to be said, need to be gotten off our chest. That's exactly what should be done. So, in conclusion with our Pass the Rock segment, I just want to touch on this past Sunday's Chiefs-Broncos game. I just want to talk a little bit about running up the score in the NFL. At the conclusion of the game, Chiefs head coach Todd Haley marched through a crowd of press and players following his team's 49-29 loss to the Broncos all the way to midfield to meet Josh McDaniels. Not for the post-game handshake, but to wag his finger like a sissy at McDaniels, exchange some choice words, and then walk away. Apparently, Todd Haley took his team's butt-whipping by the Broncos as an attempt by Josh McDaniels to run up the score. And if he did, so what? This isn't Pop Warner, nor the Little Sisters of the Poor Community Football League. This is the NFL, a grown man's game. I guess that coward Haley is unaware of the January 1993 game between the Bills and the Oilers, where the Oilers held a 35-3 lead early in the third quarter against the Bills in the wild card game. After a 28-point third quarter, the Bills managed to win the game in overtime. Or what about the January 2007 game between the Patriots and the Colts, where the Patriots held a 21-3 lead over the Colts in the AFC Championship game? Guess what, Haley? The Colts came back to win 38-34 and went on to win the Super Bowl. The point from these two examples is that miracle comebacks do happen. While they're very rare, it's impossible for any team to predict when or how they will happen. And both of the above cases eliminated the losing team from the playoffs. The way to prevent these comebacks is for teams to realize that the game is never over and to continue playing for 60 minutes. Also, there are 11 players on the defensive side of the ball who are paid to prevent the offense from scoring. The players make millions of dollars to do a job, and they get burned when they don't do their job. If a defense is running a shutout, should they show mercy on the offense and allow them a free touchdown? Remember this, Haley, you chump. It's the defense's job to stop the offense. It's not the offense's job to stop itself. And if all else fails and you really want to stop a team from running up the score on you, employ the tactics of the great John Chaney and send one of your goons out there to break somebody's neck. And maybe then they'll think twice about running up the score on you next time. And with that, I do a gorilla monkey dunk with blindfolders on to shatter the backboard.
And the crowd goes wild. PJ, you want to let them know how to get in touch with us real quick?
Yeah. Y'all can check us out on our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship or advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are on that page. We encourage you to become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. You can subscribe to and become a fan of our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. You can join the chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can still sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click on Favorites to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates about our show. Speaking of blogs, make sure you check out our blog by going to our website and hitting the blog tab. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so you can listen to the show anytime on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. So to call in and speak with the host, just dial 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. Basically, pressing 1 is like raising your hand. And who knows? One of the War Room professors just may call on you. So, guys, you got anything going on in the chat room or Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
People just laughing at some of the commentary from the different PTRs, laughing at Homo Thug and Sissies and a lot of the name calling that we do, you know, people laughing at that. You know,
yeah.
But Dev, take it from here, Dev.
All right, well, we're gonna get into this we're gonna get into a quick segment on combat sports. We're gonna recap the fight from this past weekend, and Jimmy's gonna give you a short preview of the UFC 123 that's coming up. The Pacquiao Margarito fight. It's not much to recap, not because it wasn't an eventful fight, because it was a very eventful fight, but it was very one-sided. Like, you brothers got any quick thoughts on what happened?
Hey, John was whack.
I'm just ready to see Mayweather and Pacquiao at this point, man.
Yeah. I mean,
the way we are.
Right. It definitely
tired
kept my attention.
Tired of pretty girl swirl running, man.
Yeah, it definitely kept my attention, but it was It was a beatdown all the way through. Most people give all 12 rounds to Pacquiao. I actually gave Margarito 2 rounds. One that I think he won outright, and the second one, it was kind of a pity round because he was swinging. And, you know, he
right,
got some
exactly.
stuff off. But it was domination basically from the start. Like we were discussing earlier in the first segment, Margarito came out and stood in the middle of the ring with him. Like, if y'all remember last week, Akil was saying Margarito has a chance if he pushes him back into the ropes, uses his size. You know, it seemed like he only tried to do that all of 4 or 5 times in the whole fight.
Wow.
So he kind of kicked about right in the middle of the ring. And Pacquiao, yo, I lied to you not, was hitting this dude with like 5 and 6 punch combinations. How do you not move
mm-hmm.
by like the 3rd or 4th punch? Like,
cause that's his boxing style. He comes straight as George Foreman said. He comes straight forward. So as long as he's coming straight forward, I mean that's what he's going to do. Which is why it was set up to make the ball look a certain type way.
Right.
He's like Rocky Balboa.
No head movement.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
Shout out to Rocky, the greatest boxer of all time.
That's why they call him the Mexicutioner. They set him up with all these Mexicans who just try to go toe-to-toe with him in the middle of the ring, and they don't quit. Like, they should have threw the towel in, like, in the 8th round. He was beating dude to a bloody pulp, and they just wouldn't stop the fight. So, yeah, like we said, that was domination all the way through the fight, unanimous decision. We're hoping for the super fight that everybody's been looking for, and that's all we got on that. Jimmy, what's up with
I got a question for y'all real quick, mm-hmm. and it's a one-word answer. This is B. Austin, the hot block commander. Is Floyd scared? Yes or no?
I would say I don't know. I do feel that there's an element of fear in him. I think that he thinks that it's too close. I think he believes that he may lose, and I think he doesn't want to taint his record. I think he's scared to lose. And I know he definitely sees Pacquiao as a viable threat. Now, I believe that styles make fights at the end of the day, and I believe that a pure boxer who is defensive and boxes well and respects the art can beat a puncher or a non-boxer any day. But I don't know if he has that much confidence in himself. From his skill level, I think that he still can beat Pacquiao, but I think he is scared. Sorry for going on a little bit. But
and to answer your question, Go ahead, Dennis.
No, I was about to say I'm glad PJ went on because I don't have to say anything because I agree 100%.
Okay, well, basically what I'm going to say is it's pretty much the same. I don't think he's scared of Pacquiao. I think he's scared of a blemish on his record. And that's another problem that's wrong with boxing, but that's either here nor there. Let me run through this UFC 123 preview real fast. I'm going to do it real fast. He's calling pretty girl swirl. Let me run through this UFC 123 preview. I'm going to be real fast with this because I don't know how many MMA fans we have out there. We had a couple cats on our Facebook page tell me they were in the MMA like I am. I'm a junkie. But UFC 123 is this weekend as a pay-per-view event. And I'm just going to go through the two major headliners, the co-headline event. I'm not going to go through all the smaller events because, like I said, I don't know if people really care or not. But the two main events is one main event is between Matt Hughes and BJ Penn. BJ Penn is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, and Matt Hughes is a wrestler. Matt Hughes' record is 45-7, and BJ Penn's record is 15-7. And the thing about MMA versus boxing is you'll rarely find an MMA fighter with zero losses. And the reason for that is, it's just what we said about boxing. Because of the way the business is structured, the best always fight the best. And there's only so many fighters allowed within MMA or, you know, you pretty much are cut. And you have to fight the best. There's no way to get around it. BJ Penn is a former lightweight champion. Matt Hughes is a former welterweight champion. And there's only one belt per weight class, unlike boxing. So these guys have fought twice already. Penn won the first by submission. And Hughes won the second time by TKO. So this is the rubber match. And, you know, these guys are both legends in the sport. And then the main event is one Quentin Rampage Jackson versus Lyoto the Dragon Machida. And people may know Rampage Jackson because he played Mr. T in the A-Team movie. Yeah, he was B.A. Baracus, you know. So he's 30-8. He's also a former lightweight champion. And Lyoto the Dragon Machida is 16-1, who's also a former lightweight champion. And this right here, this fight will determine, you know, their rankings in terms of who will get a shot at the title again. So this is a big fight here. And Quentin Rampage Jackson has a huge following, as you can see by him playing in the movie. So it looks like it'll be a nice event because Quentin Rampage Jackson is, you know, he practices wrestling while the Dragon is a karate guy, Shokotan karate and also jiu-jitsu. So just like boxing with styles make fights, these styles are pretty much made for each other as well, as one is pretty much a defensive counter fighter and the other one is coming directly at you. So it'll make for a great fight. I want to breeze through that. If anybody is interested in hearing more MMA or anything like that, you know, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, and let me know. But just want to throw that out there real quick to see if people care. So from here on, let's just jump right into MMA. Go ahead.
I just want to interject one point. I can understand, like, what you're saying about the records. Like, you're not going to find people walking around with spotless records because I think in MMA, even if you're noticeably better than a dude, you can get caught with any kind of crazy kick at any time that might put your lights out. So it really don't matter who's better than who. Yeah, I feel that.
I mean, for anybody out there that doesn't know, I am a huge MMA fan. Like, out of the war room, you know, I love MMA. And that's one of the reasons why. I mean, I grew up watching boxing like everybody else, but you get tired of things like Floyd and Pacquiao not fighting. That wouldn't happen in the UFC. It just wouldn't happen. So, you know, with that being said, let's just jump right into some basketball talk because I'm also a hoops head. And I definitely want to talk some basketball with you guys. Real quick, the first thing in basketball is the Utah Jazz. And before we jump into talk, I want to personally take this time
to apologize to
one Deron Williams real quick. I need to send an apology to him because I went on a record as saying that Blake Griffin is the best mulatto player in the league, and I'm absolutely wrong. I watch the NBA ticket every night, and when I watch the Utah Jazz play, this dude has no flaws. Deron Williams is not only the best mulatto in the league, he's the best point guard in the league. And that's just my opinion. I want to apologize to him. You still hold the crown as the mulatto champion. But what you guys think about Utah being comeback kids and, you know, winning all these games coming back that way?
It's crazy. It seemed like every night, what they had, five straight, like two of them were from 22 down, two from 18
crazy.
Down, one from 11 down. It's great to see. It's exciting to watch, but I don't think they should make their living, you know, getting down by these many points. They need to play a little harder when the game starts. But just on your point, like Deron Williams being the best point guard in the league, I've been saying that for the last 3 years, man. No disrespect to Chris Paul because I think they can do the same things, but if two guys can do the same thing, I'm going to take the bigger guy.
Deron Williams will punch on you. Chris Paul won't punch on nobody.
And Deron Williams plays defense, better defense. He's not, you
absolutely.
Know,
Absolutely.
No disrespect to Chris Paul, because CP3 is that
dude. Chris Paul's that dude, no homo. But, I mean, like, Deron Williams, however you want to pronounce it, he's the best point guard in the NBA.
D. Will is the catalyst of that team, man. I mean, he's a clear leader. And like Dev said, I mean, from what I'm looking at this year, man, I think he is right now playing as the best point guard in the league. And, I mean, the thing about the Jazz is it's dangerous to have that, like, it's dangerous to play games that way. So basically, in order going down by like these large amounts and then trying to, you know, or putting it together toward the end to come back, because basketball is really a game of runs. So I mean, if fortunately, you know, they've been able to get it together toward the end of games and come back, but that's not always going to happen. So obviously, we're thinking long term. Say like in the playoffs, that's a dangerous style of play to take into the playoffs. But yeah, D. Will, he's the mulatto champion right now.
Yeah, absolutely. He got the belt.
And he rocked the Sunni beard, so he get points for that. Pause. the dude has no flaws in his game. So really, it's like pick your poison when you compare the two. But I don't want to be prisoner of the moment. Now, I will say this: Dev has been saying D. Will for like three seasons, so I'm really not addressing that to you, or really Jimmy either, because I heard you shouted him out.
No, I've always said that he was the best point guard. It's just that I gave the mulatto king to somebody else, and I got to bring it back home because this dude is balling.
I'm really speaking more to the fans, because now as we become a culture of immediacy, I have to ask. I mean, when it comes to Chris Paul, it's like, yo, y'all must have forgot.
That's why I said Boy, don't disrespect to the young boy.
Yo,
because
Chris Paul is number two. And again, by saying that, because you say somebody's number two, that's not disrespectful.
Let me say this. Now, I do get where you're coming from as far as his physicality. Chris Paul got a nasty streak in him that's necessary to be a true champion when you're a leader of a team. We saw him punch somebody in the nads, and not that I'm condoning that behavior, but that level of intensity, that level of win at all costs, I'm not saying Deron doesn't have it, but we know Chris Paul has it, and I think that that's necessary to take it to another level. And I also think that Deron's squad, he has a lot more tools to work with. David West is not that good.
Let's move on real quick, because you lead us right into what I'm going to talk about.
Hey, Jimmy, I was going to say, since we've been segueing into Chris Paul, you know, y'all think the Hornets are for real? They got one loss on the
record. I think Chris Paul is for real.
Well,
how long do you think Chris Paul can be for real and carry the team?
What I want to say goes to what Brad said in terms of them not being good. They don't look good on paper, but the team is built around him. They have pieces that work, because when it comes to basketball, it's not always about who's the best talent or who does it. It's about building a team the right way. And if you look at their team with the additions they made, like Trevor Ariza, a lot of small moves they made, they're built around his skill set. So they're a good team. And right now,
and they're guys that are stepping up.
Exactly. Mecca looks like he didn't went to camp with Hakeem as well, because he's balling right now. So, you know, they're a for real team, but in terms of being for real, what does that mean? I mean, they're a good team. Do I see them winning? No. They're a good team.
Yeah, I think what Jimmy says, right, it reminds you kind of, I mean, it's early in the season to make this comparison and really, really mean it, but in theory, it reminds you of like the 2001 Sixers. Like, Larry Brown built the team around Allen Iverson, didn't have a lot of big names on it, but they had names that fit his style of play that helped him to
great
shine,
analogy.
Which in turn helped them to shine.
Great
so,
analogy. That's
I,
a great analogy.
I don't know how far. AI can't get a run, y'all. Check it out. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. Y'all heard it before. AI can't get a run. We got the hashtag moving on Twitter.
Yo, next thing I want to talk about in terms of basketball. Did y'all guys see Kevin Love put up 31-31 in a game?
Yo, he's taking over the position from Lewis Scola as the best non-athletic player he has never jumped in his life.
Why people keep coming at Scola?
Hold up, hold up. Yo, you can't do that, fam. Are you? Yo, Scola's still putting up 30. Scola had like 26 and 7
last night. Yeah.
Scola's consistently. Yo, Scola's consistent with his double double.
I'm not pooping on him. I'm not pooping, but what I'm saying is Kevin Love is in a position. Yo, 31 rebounds.
First of all, that comes
Moses.
Because he was playing Amari Stoudemire, who's the softest big man in the league. No rainbow. That he got about 20 of those boards just pushing him out the way because the ball is soft, dude.
Pull your skirt down, B.
Yo, that's like on a much much lower level. That's like taking that 81 away from Jordan's son.
Oh, no hats. Like, yo, I'm not taking away the numbers. Kevin Love is balling. And, you know, I always appreciate when guys who play a cerebral game like a Kevin Love or a Luis Scola, I appreciate that in hoops, but at the same time.
A heady player. He's scrappy.
Hey, yo.
Yo, you got peep Scola's game, though.
Yo, y'all segues are on point tonight because I'm actually going to be in Minnesota tomorrow, and I'm going to the game where Minnesota is playing the Lakers, so I'm going to get to see Kevin Love to see if he do his Moses Malone impersonation in person, and Mr. 81 is going to be in the building. So
I will report
back and let y'all know how that goes.
That's good money. Real quick, I want to talk about one more thing in basketball before we move on to football. I want to know what you guys think about LeBron saying that he is playing too many minutes. Like, really?
Man.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm going to let somebody else go because y'all know I'm a gun on this one.
Well, hey, PJ, what you got to say about that young man? PJ.
I mean, as much as I try not to.
Hey, PJ, one second. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to, because somebody brought this to my attention last week. We kind of brought up a topic and didn't tell the audience. We just assumed that they knew. Jimmy's talking about the fact that LeBron went into his press conference last week after a game, after a loss to the Celtics, and basically was reading
the stat sheet.
And threw his coach under the bus saying, me playing 44 minutes, that's too much. 40 for D-Wade, that's too much. And, you know, throwing a coach under the bus. So go ahead, BJ, what you got on that?
No, I was just saying, as much as I try not to, like, pick on LeBron, man, because everybody, you know, the LeBron stands feel like if you say anything wrong about him that you're picking on him or you're not giving him a chance. My thing is this. Why would you put your coach under the bus? Like, that was a bad move. That was just a bad move all the way around. Like, first of all, to me, to complain about the minutes that you're playing in a press conference is just, like, I don't even know if I've ever seen that in the NBA before, where you're complaining about playing too many. And then, like you said, you put your coach under the bus. That's a horrible move. I mean, to me, what else can you say? It's a bad move, and dude is just – he puts himself out there for the type of criticism
hold on,
that he
PJ, was. PJ. Doesn't he get paid millions of dollars to play basketball?
Last I checked, he was getting a nice cheek to play basketball. To say that you only have to play. His cheap. There's no specifications in his contract that say you get paid this money, but you don't have to play the whole game because we don't want you to get tired out there. Like, come on, man. Does he enjoy playing the game? Like, if I enjoy playing the game, a lot of players, like one of my, like our homie AI, he would get mad when you took him out the game. This dude is complaining about playing too many minutes.
My man get a nice.
They didn't. AI used to curse Larry Brown's mother every time he came out the game.
Yo,
I've never in my life seen a superstar player complain about playing too many minutes. I've always seen superstar players complain about not playing enough minutes. Why are you taking me out in certain situations? Yo, this dude has a problem with his heart, man. He really has
yo,
a problem.
Yo, what's wrong with the boy, though? Like, I know that B. Austin goes in on him a whole lot, no homo. And I'll be telling him, like, yo, you know, you go after LeBron a lot. But, yo, the ball consistently gives us material. Like, real talk. Like, what do you mean you play too much? Did you guys see what Chris Bosh said last night?
Yeah, they are tripping in the media, man.
Yo, they asked, just to let you know, they asked Chris Bosh about his coach last night. He said, the coach always wants to work. Sometimes we want to chill. Yo, you dudes aren't playing that great ball, so he wants you to put in extra work. You tell him, no,
we
want to
chill.
Yo, I really
played the one ball, homie.
Let me weigh in, brothers. And I know that y'all all get on me for getting after Ramon. Because, first of all, War Room World, his name is Ramon. It's not LeBron James. It's Ramon.
Or LeBronte West.
LeBronte West. Listen, the guys I grew up watching basketball, the men that shaped and molded the NBA and the way the world views basketball at this point would have played 4 days straight with no water and no timeout if it meant that the other guy would lose and they could win. And I'm not just talking about the greatest of all time and Michael Jordan. I'm talking Magic. I'm talking Isaiah. I'm talking Larry Bird. I'm talking AI. I'm talking Kobe. I'm talking Hakeem. Even soft-ass David Robinson. Yo, I'm playing too many minutes. Come on, I don't have to say anymore.
Listen, we got a caller on the Digital
you got a
Extreme
couple
Technology
calls.
Hotline. I got that. you're in the War Room. Caller 301-613. What's your name? Where you calling from?
This is Brandy from Bowie.
I knew that number looked familiar. What's up?
I'm sure you did. Good. How you guys doing tonight?
Hey, Brandy.
What's up, Brandy?
Hey,
what's up, Brandy?
Of course, y'all are talking about my favorite NBA player. And I just wanted to say that I wish any of us who work a 9-to-5 job go into the office and tell the boss, you know what? I work 8 hours a day is too much for me. I'm only going to work 5. And see if you still have your job. I'm so tired of him whining and complaining and blaming everybody but himself. Shut up and play. That's what you're getting paid
exactly.
for.
Exactly. Great
Amen.
Point.
Righty.
Yo,
thank you for your call.
On and say, I play too many minutes and AI can't get a run?
But check this out. That's the, just like to Brandy's point, that's just like us going to work, right? And it's not like they played overtime. Like, they went into overtime and he said, you know, me playing 52 minutes was too much. That's like Brandy said, you go to work, you're scheduled for an 8-hour day. But your boss isn't asking you to work overtime. They're asking you to work those 8 hours that you get paid for. And you're like, nah, you know what? I don't feel like working today. Like, you're asking me to work my whole shift is asking me to do too much. Like, your boss will probably look at you like you had 10 heads. No way.
Yo, Rondo
like,
averaged
like what he said,
39 minutes.
Put
yo.
It in context of you know, an average person who's not a star athlete, it just sounds ridiculous.
Yo, definitely does. We got a couple more calls. You want me to take these real quick, Dev?
Yeah, you can get to the Digital Extreme Technology Hotline.
All right, I'm going to take this call on the Digital Extreme Technology Hotline. Let's see. Boom. 570-762, you're in the war room. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Yeah, what's good? It's Jay. What's good?
Jay, what's good, bad. Homie?
Jordan. Good. All right, let's get on these topics. Number one, CP's a monster. Just let you know now, he coming to Jersey or New York with Carmelo, because I know a chick that's a high price jump off that's messing with Melo right now. And she confirmed it. and she confirmed that. So best believe you're gonna see him in the East Coast. With LeBron, man, I don't know what to do with LeBron, man. LeBron playing himself, man. Like, real talk, remember I said it. They is not going to win a championship ever in Miami unless those three get dismantled. Him bumming and complaining about that game versus the Celtics, how are you going to do a spin-off three-point shot with Wade wide open at the end of the game? Like, he bugging, man. I feel like right now his career is going to go downwards now. He remind me of Pippen, but a Pippen that's a ball hog. His game is patent like him, and I'm not a fan of LeBron no more. So I'm at a point with the NBA. I'm just upset that AI can't get a run, man. AI can't get a run, man. I'm just, you know what I mean?
Right,
I'm not feeling
hey.
It right now.
All right, man. Thank you for your call, man. Appreciate it.
Yo, good looking, Jay. Thanks, man.
Jay crazy, man.
Yo, Jay is hilarious, yo.
Jay-Z,
homie,
ain't
though.
No mellow jump off chick. You
got to
inside of
a
new one.
Yo. Anyway, right, man, let's move on, man. Yo, you know what,
and
man?
Move on to some NFL talk real quick. We kind of
behind
on
time. Let's do this real
time.
Quick, yo, because I want to get into the main topic. Let's get into NFL real quick. Go ahead,
Well, listen, because I'm going to just name a few topics, and then we can just go on to what, you know, that Eagles, Redskins Monday night, not really the game, but, you know, Vic's performance, McNabb's contract, stuff like that. Things that happened during the week in the NFL, the Bears actually won the Pick Bowl. Both quarterbacks tried to give it away. Cutler had two interceptions, but Brett Favre beat him with three, so the Bears came out on top of that. The Cowboys finally got off the mat, smacked the Giants up a little bit. Hope they didn't anger them for next week's game against the Eagles. The Jags won with the luckiest play on earth, the Hail Mary. Everybody's getting on the defensive back for knocking the ball down, but that's what you're taught to do. You're not supposed to catch the ball because it can get snatched from you in the end zone. So he did exactly what he was supposed to do, and he's taking a lot of heat for it. And I think, Jimmy, you told me the other day that they're asking for the guy who caught the joint, Thomas. They want his jersey and cleats in the Hall of Fame. You know how I feel about that. Just for catching a Hail Mary pass, like, come on, son. Hines Ward is upset about being taken out of the game after his concussion. Now, we all know Hines Ward is a tough SOB, but I think he's really mad because his streak of consecutive games with a catch ended because he couldn't get back in the game. So I think he got some selfish motives right there. So let's get into this. Before the big game on Monday night where, you know, that Brad just addressed so eloquently, McNabb got a new contract, which everybody originally thought was $78 million and $40 million guaranteed. Brad, they made some changes to what that really was. You want to speak on it real quick?
Yeah. ladies and gentlemen, we've been hearing reports throughout the media, different numbers, different figures. Some saying $78 million, some saying incentives could take that contract as high as $88 million. The contract itself actually only guarantees $3.5 million this season, another number of $7 million and change next year with the incentives kicking in both years. It's definitely a performance-based contract, so there isn't any huge guaranteed number like $40 million, which was originally being reported on ESPN by Mort and a couple of other insiders.
Hey, Brad, there's really – I think they have some language in the contract that Mike Shanahan probably wrote personally because they have an out at the end of this season. They can cut him this season but would owe him $3.75 million. So what I'm thinking is all this contract is a $3.75 million apology for embarrassing him last week. That's all I think.
Yeah, and I can see Snyder signing off on that. And one of the things you have to always realize about football is, much like a regular job, you can be cut and your salary is gone. The only guaranteed money is what's either paid to you up front or what is written specifically in the contract as a part of your signing bonus. Right. So it's highly likely that the Redskins will part ways with him. But it is rather funny that he signs a $78 million deal and then participates in helping the Eagles win.
Yeah. Wait, one more point on the contract real quick before you move on.
My point is that you guys know I come from the real estate world, and I look at this like an option contract. I look at so much as an apology, but we're going to give you this bread just in case we want to keep you. But if we don't, we don't have to exercise it. So I look at it as just an option to see if they have any better alternatives. Because as bad as McNabb is, the group of quarterbacks out there is just as bad. They want to see what their options are.
If he's on the roster next year, though, he does get a roster bonus of $10 million. Add that to his base salary next year of $2 million. If he's still on the Redskins next year, you know, they'll owe him $12 million, which is a pretty penny to pay any quarterback in 1 year. Yeah, so that's where he would make his money if he's back on the team next year. But he'll never see anywhere near what the numbers were that they were reporting before the game. And one last thing about the contract, they have a clause in there, and this is probably from McNabb's side, since they are playing behind that terrible Washington Redskins line. They have language in the contract where if he has a career-ending injury and never gets to, you know, see if he – can play for another team next year or in the future, the Redskins will owe him $25 million. So that's where he cashes in. So I'm thinking the dude about to take a dive. He's about to take a dive and get some doctors to co-sign on it.
Yeah, like the university account. He's going to start faking injuries just to get that bread.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but the main topic of the week, you know, I hear everybody, you know, saying this ball is one of the greatest now after four games. The Monday night performance was spectacular, off the hook. Mike Vick looked good. He was passing well. He was running well. He looked like a new quarterback. Now, what's your thoughts, PJ? I mean, are you ready to crown him? Because people are already saying his name with Manning and Brady and people like that.
People want to crown him. Crown him.
That's exactly what came to mind. Did he agree? No. My thing is, I'm excited. I mean, he's playing very well. He had a great game. I'm surprised by looking at what I'm seeing. The way I'm seeing him play now versus the Michael Vick that I saw in Atlanta is a big improvement. So, you know, all kudos and shout-outs go to Mike Vick. As an Eagles fan, I'm excited. I love watching them play because he does make that offense exciting. But I'm not just ready to crown him yet. I wouldn't call him Brady or Manning yet. I mean, again, like you alluded to earlier, I mean, he's played 4.5 games. He's played well, but it's been 4.5 games. So at the end of the season, we can look back and we can analyze how far he's gotten us and, you know, how far the team has gone and what he's done. And then, you know, start to form better opinions instead of just feeding off of what the media is saying right now and comparing him to the greatest quarterbacks that ever played. I'm excited. I'm happy for him, but I just want to – I'm taking it one game at a time. Just beat the Giants. I'll be even happier than I am now. So
yeah.
that's my perspective.
B. Austin, I hear this talk a lot. Sign him up right now. Should the Eagles give Mike Vick a contract right now? And I actually got something on this after you finish.
Whoo! It's a business. It comes down to dollars and cents, and Mike Vick is an asset. It's a question of what you can get the asset for. I would look at this the same way Andy Reid does young players early on in their career before they come out of their rookie contract. He gets them first two seasons, sign long-term deal. If you're able to get Mike Vick at what I would consider a discount, which would be $5 to $6 million a season, $7 million a season, I would say make it happen on a five-year deal. But we all know that his advisors aren't going to allow that to happen. But I would try it. I would try.
Listen, here's my thoughts on that. I say you don't give him a contract right now, especially because you have that insurance behind him and another pretty good quarterback, and they feel good about the third-string quarterback in Mike Kafka. So by not signing him, why I'm bringing up those other two guys' names, because by not signing him, then you risk him getting injured. I mean, which is a win-win for the Eagles. If you sign him now and he gets injured and you're still on the hook for that money, then you feel stupid. But my main point of saying not to sign Mike Vick right now is because...
Franchise.
Not even the franchise, because the collective bargaining agreement hasn't even been agreed upon yet, so we're not even sure if the franchise tag is going to mean anything after this season. But why pay him now? Keep him hungry. Paid players aren't hungry. You know what I'm saying? He's playing right now for a contract, so as long as we dangle the contract in front of him, he will keep playing like a crazed dog. No pun intended.
That's somewhat true. That's somewhat true because
he may keep playing
that way because of the contract. But you know, just to counter your point, Tom Brady got whopped up, and this dude is playing like he don't have nothing. Tom Brady got the hunger of like a dude that hasn't done anything. Maybe Mike Vick doesn't have that hunger, but my point is, you hold all the cards. I mean, I understand what you're saying in terms of the collective bargaining agreement, but I don't see the owners getting rid of that whole franchise tag because they want to be able to keep
that. The owners are going to fight tooth and nail to keep that.
Yeah, so with that being said, let's just assume that the franchise tag is there. You always have that option, so I wouldn't pay him now anyway. I'm with you.
That's my option too. Like, I'm either not going to pay him right now and keep him hungry, and even if you get to the end of the season and you're still not sure what your future is going to look like because of his age, his play might decline a little bit in the last 8 weeks because, you know, everybody in the world has already anointed him Superman. But, you know, that's how people are in the what have you done for me lately sports world. I'm with you, Jimmy. I mean, it might end up being a franchise tag at the end of this.
I definitely want the Eagles to kind of keep the dogs together and keep letting them loose. Pun intended. how does the collective bargaining agreement factor into this, into what they would do? If I was Mike Vick, I would want the security now? Because isn't it up at the end of the year and they're looking at a work stoppage?
Yeah, they're looking at a lockout right now. That's why a lot of teams are reluctant to make any big deals right now because they don't know.
Did Peyton get his dough? No, Peyton didn't even get his dough yet.
Peyton didn't get his dough yet. and we thought Donovan got his dough, but, you know, Donovan ain't getting it. He got a $3.5 million parting gift because if it's Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan's decision at the end of the season, he won't be around. So, I don't know.
Yeah, they definitely don't have to do anything now. I mean, they still have time. They get a lease. I mean, if they don't want it to get into a point where the season's over and he's getting, you know, entertained by all these other crazy offers and stuff like that, they could still at least let him play the rest of the season out to make a better decision. So I don't know that I would do it now. And like you said, I mean, a hungry player oftentimes is going to play at his best. I mean, we've seen it happen all the time. I mean, you also have the Tom Brady situation, but, you know, so, yeah, I would say at least wait till the end
of the
season.
Man, bottom line with that whole situation is the Eagles hold all the cards, in my opinion.
Mm-mm, they always do. And they always put themselves in a position to hold all the cards. Straight up.
This is DMX, right. And I don't appreciate what he did to them dogs.
Jim, you want to bring us into that what sports got to do with it topic of the night?
All right, hold on 1 second. You said you want me to take us into that?
Yeah.
All right, well, you know, before I do that real quick, I just want to throw the number out there real quick. If anybody wants to talk to us, the number is 323-410-0012, and press 1 if you want to talk to us. But let's jump into our segment of what sports got to do with it. This is a discussion.
Yeah, Tina.
This is a quick Tina, that worked. Patty's still better. Anyway, this is a quick discussion about one Tyler Perry, because Tyler Perry's most recent movie has once again sparked a huge debate in the African-American community, so we figured we'd get involved as well. Again, call us calling if you want to. So I'm going to give the floor to one Devin McMullen, because I know he's very passionate about this movie. He saw the For Color Girls movie, and he was kind of upset after seeing it. So you want to, you know, take it over and let us know what your problem is with one Tyler Perry?
Cool. This is my problem. Let me give a quick background of my history with Tyler Perry and his movies. Back when, you know, he first started getting popular with all the Madea movies, when I saw the previews, I was never interested because I, you know, was thinking another black dude cooning in drag. And, you know, not that I was really, really knocking them that bad. I just wasn't interested. They didn't look good to me, and I already had enough coons in my life. I love Martin. I love Eddie. You know, that's all I needed. So somebody actually convinced me to see Diary of a Mad Black Woman. I saw that on video, and I actually dug the movie. You know, it had some good messages in it. You know, it showed, you know, the negative side of some life in the black community. It showed some positive sides. It's cool. One movie. But ever since then, you know, I've been a supporter of this man's work, but time and time again, movie after movie, it's the same trends of showing the black community, especially black men, in a negative light. I'm not saying that the things that he portrays in his movie don't go on. I'm not that naive. I'm from the inner city. I see things. You know, I've had a crazy life myself, you know, with my family. However, there's another side to that coin, and guys like us who are pretty well educated, doing the right things, you know, sometimes we want to see us on the screen and not as the fourth, you know, male character in the movie. You know, we want to be the lead sometimes. We want the story to be about us sometimes. And this last movie that he made has sparked a lot of debate because it seems like it's the same old stuff, the same old, I mean, we're portrayed in this movie as rapists, murderers. What else went on in this movie? One guy raped somebody. The other guy killed his kids. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank here. But anyway, my point is, it's the same old stuff. Now, before Brad gets off on this, Paul, I just want to say, before the people call in to defend him, because everybody does defend him, it's like, where does it end? That's my question. Where does it end? Brett.
Well, you know, I have a similar history with Mr. Perry.
I mean, just to kind of buttress your original points, I saw the Madea series of plays, even. I'll go back prior to him getting into film as a producer. He was very heavy on the black, I guess, quote-unquote, Chitlin play circuit, and that's where he cut his teeth. And I, like you, you know, I think that black people as a whole, we're very diverse. I mean, all color, all different color, shapes, and sizes, multiple experiences and unique experiences that you know, are worth telling a story. But the one thing that bothers me universally about Tyler Perry's work is that, A, there is always a, in my perspective, a demeaning air towards black masculinity, and it's utilized to galvanize black women and kind of bring them together, saying, look, girl, we all go through this, and you know, it paints a picture where the black male is the enemy. And I think that you'll never rise above or heal wounds by dividing us. So, you know, I can't say that that's intentional on his part, but it's a reality for me from my perspective and what I see in his work. I have to be honest, I didn't see For Colored Girls, and the reason that I haven't seen it yet is because I want to see the original author's story first, or at least read her work prior to seeing.
Let me tell you about that real quick, because actually when I brought that up, you know, I wasn't being all that fair to him. For Colored Girls actually was, like you're saying, it's an adaptation from a prior work. So all of the discussions that I've had in the past 2 weeks about that movie, that's the excuse that everybody's given him. Well, this, you know, he didn't even write this, blah, blah, blah. Well, he had to adapt it to the big screen. And my question to everybody who asked that question to me is, if this movie didn't have the same trends of showing that negative side of black men in our community, would he have even taken on this project in the first place? And we have a caller on the line, so maybe they can answer that question. The Digital Extreme Tech hotlines are blowing up this evening.
Yeah, we got a caller. Real quick, let me get my
2-6.
You got it already?
My bad, Jim.
Yeah, hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello,
this is Felicia Dandridge from Philadelphia.
Hey, uh-oh. Felicia Dandridge from Philadelphia.
Yes, Oh, you know I'm chomping at the bit, Devin. You know I am. You know I'm ready for you, baby.
Get on.
Let me say hello to you all. I've enjoyed this show. I love y'all. I want to acknowledge everything that you have said as valid points based on your reality and how you see things. I, however, do have to point out some things. Okay. Devin, and I was the main one that said, did you read the original work? But also, Tyler Perry, I do not feel just predominantly just tries to throw out themes as far as portraying men in a bad light. There are plenty of times where he gets on women about being so focused on their pain and can't see the good men that are in their life, i.e. Daddy's Little Girls, i.e. Diary of a Mad Black Woman, she had a good man that was trying to do for her, and she couldn't even get past her own hurt and pain. What I'm trying to say is I get sick of people trying to, I know everybody's reality is their reality, but I see things from a different side, coming from somebody that comes from a family that has all kinds of stories, has all those kinds of pains in their family history. And to see somebody bringing stuff like that, because in the black community, stuff like that doesn't get talked about. We see how we talk about crazy white people and white perverts trying to molest kids and different things like that. In the black community, we don't handle stuff like that. I've had stuff in my family going on where they try to act like it didn't exist. I had to take care of my aunt that had to jump from a 3-story window based on a man that was trying to beat her. I mean, thank God they're still married.
Listen, that's the point that I made earlier, because I have some harsh family stories as well, and we all know that this stuff really does go on.
I just don't think that it's fair the way people comment Tyler Perry.
I know, but it's like, how many times is he going to write the same movie with different characters? Like, okay, it's like,
I can understand, and I can understand that, but I could say the same thing about other movies that don't fall in this genre. I could say the same thing about anything else. Why? Because it's a repeated theme. Why does it mean that he can't tell it? And I don't feel that he focuses on just the bad. I feel that he focuses on a lot of positivity about black men. I feel he tries to bring that out, that there are black men out here doing the right thing, that are about their business, that are successful, taking care of their family.
Name how many of his movies where this positive
Listen, you guys are all about stats and counting and everything like that, and I can go back and do my research and my homework because I am a huge fan. I don't have all those stats and numbers ran down for you, but guess what? I will post it on Facebook for you.
Okay,
the point that I'm trying to make, I feel like people come at Tyler Perry, and I've even seen famous black actors and producers come at him when he has kept people working, and he tells these things. I just think that it's important. I think that he doesn't come from a place where he's just trying to make a dollar. Yes, you have to make money in this world, but I think he is bigger than that, and that's just the way I see him. And I'm not just on him to be on him, because there were some movies that I did not like that I thought were very corny. I'm not just a Tyler Perry fan just to be a fan. I really believe in the messages that he brings, and I originally became a fan of his by going to see his Chitlin' Circuit plays. And anytime, because I am a writer, and I look at content and everything, I examine it. I'm very analytical. Anytime you can make me want to jump up on stage and punch that character out, that's a time. I'm sorry.
We got a bunch of calls coming in.
Felicia,
thanks for your call. We're going to holler at you on Facebook, though. Come
to
the world on Facebook.
Felicia Marquita, right. Hit me up. I'll be glad to continue the discussion.
Okay. Dev, real quick, I just want to give my two cents, because you and Brad went in. I'm not going to be long at all. Shondell, sorry if I pronounced your name wrong. She's in the chat room, and she said a couple things that I was actually getting ready to say. She says that Tyler Perry seems like he's the only black writer-director that we really support. And she also says the answer to the question that why he does the same movie is because it's successful for him. Now, and she also says that when you find a recipe that works, why change the recipe? Now, my point is...
Let me answer Shondell real quick.
I'm sorry. I apologize for that, brother. But listen, though.
At one point, if you're the biggest black producer, director out there, at what point do you show some kind of social responsibility towards the black community? That's my question.
Where are the pieces that are to build and uplift the black man?
Let me get my point on this real quick. My point is, I understand about adults.
I'm talking about the kids that watch this stuff.
Listen, real quick. My point on Tyler Perry is this. I understand exactly what you guys are saying. I just personally don't think he's as talented as people think, because, again, he makes the same story over and over again. I get the point that it works. But to me, in order to be a great artist, you have to step outside the box. If not, he can sit there and make the money all he wants to. And to answer your point, where are the movies, he really doesn't owe us anything. The bottom line is, don't consider yourself to be great if you're not, you know, if you're not stepping outside of the box to do great things. If you're going to keep making the same movies over and over again, that's your prerogative. He can do that. He can be harsh towards the black male. But at the same time, if you want to start considering it, that's what I don't get, is why it seems like he's the only one that we do support. I just don't think he's that talented. I've seen it. When you've seen one of his movies, you've seen them all, more or less.
Hey, let's knock a couple of these calls out real fast, because we got to move on.
Yeah, absolutely, because we got our guests waiting. Let's get knock a couple calls out. You want to take them down?
All right, I got this one. 267-760, you're in the war room. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Uh-oh.
My bad. Say that again. 267-760?
No, it's 267-679. You're in the war room. 267-679, you're in the war room.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, you're in now.
Yeah, this is Monica calling from Philly.
Hey, Monica, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Monty?
All right, well, here's my Tyler Perry feedback. I've been actually waiting for this topic all week. And as a black professional woman, I actually don't agree with the way that he depicts black women in his movies either. Either they're ultra sassy and can't get a man because of it, or weak and need a man to help them pull them up. So with that being said, I don't agree with that depiction either. But at the same time, people talk about he's doing the same story over and over again. At the end of the day, A, it is a business, and B, based on that interview I saw on Oprah, it seems like he's writing what he knows. So with that being said, should he step outside that box and write something that he doesn't know and take a chance that it won't be successful? Because he is still pretty much the biggest breadwinner at his studio.
I think he's like, in the black community, he's like Jay-Z. Jay-Z admittedly dumbed down his lyrics. Because at that point, Jay-Z knew that all these morons was going to keep buying his, me included, were going to keep buying his music anyway. Tyler Perry makes a different kind of movie. Who's not going to go see it? That flocks to go see his movies. Yo, I saw this movie by happenstance on the Friday that it came out because we just happened to be home because we had some appointments. And the parking lot was full at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I think people took off work to go see Tyler Perry movies. So I think he has a few, you know, if he does want to step outside his box every once in a while, I think he can go ahead and try that because I don't think for right now his audience is going anywhere. He probably has to make four or five figures
in a row. But at the same time, when he made the sequel to Why Did I Get Married, the end of that movie had a somewhat tragic ending, which is something that he doesn't normally do. The feedback I got from people was like, that didn't end like a Tyler Perry movie, and it made them skeptical about going to see the next movie. So,
that's the risk that you got to take as an artist, because there's so many themes and topics within this discussion, and I'm going to piggyback on Jimmy and what you said, Dev, and say at the risk of not selling well, you have to give the people what your expression is from your heart and soul as opposed to crafting something that you feel will sell. His movies right now, I feel like they're made because he knows that they will sell. And whatever negative or positive he puts in there for black women, as long as they can relate to it, then they feel as though their voice is heard, so they're going to go to the theaters and support it. And there's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. So I don't want to sit here and say, like, we're indicting him for being supportive of black women, but it's counterproductive as a whole.
Yo,
if
Brad, real quick, but that as being an artist, that's up to you. Maybe he doesn't want to be.
Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. Go ahead, John.
Maybe he doesn't want to be that artist that reaches, you know, across all different kind of lines and boundaries. Maybe he just wants to stay in the box, so to speak.
Then he's a hustler, and at that point, I have to call him accountable because you are doing a disservice to your community.
That may be the case. He may be a great hustler, horrible artist.
Let's take one more call on the topic because we have our special guest waiting.
I know. The lines are blowing up. Yeah. Tyler Perry got people calling to fight for him.
You're in the war room. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's not Roby from Baltimore.
Roby!
Hey, Roby, what's up?
Roby!
Hey, guys. I'll try to be really, really brief, but I am, like, extremely torn when it comes to Tyler Perry because for a long time, I definitely felt that he was doing a disservice with the kind of buffoonery kind of things. That just wasn't my thing. I heard, I think it was Devin saying that he kind of bashes men, black men, in most of his movies. I think coming from a society where women are marginalized so much, I really don't see that. Like, that was never an issue for me. I never took that perspective on his movies, that he's male bashing. Like, I never got that kind of feeling from his movies. But, like Monica said a little earlier, after seeing kind of his story on Oprah, like, you see a completely different perspective of him. You see him coming from a completely different world that I would pray that none of us have ever had any kind of tasting of. Like, he's coming from an extremely dark place, an extremely hurtful place, an extremely painful place, and this is his outlet. You know, he you know, puts on these wigs, puts on these costumes, puts on these outfits, and I honestly do believe it's therapeutic for him. This is his kind of outlet. Everybody may not agree with it. Everybody may not like it, me being one of them. But I really do believe that this is kind of a therapeutic outlet for this man. So I'm kind of torn because I don't like a lot of his movies. And not saying that nobody should, you know, different twists for everybody. But I definitely think he's coming from a different place. And someone, I think it was Jimmy who said, you know, he needs to kind of switch it up. He's been doing this long enough. But Spike Lee were doing, you know, Fight the Power, Black Power movies the majority of the beginning of his career. It took him some time before he got to a place where he was able to be recognized for making different movies that had different messages. It takes that,
well, that wasn't
it takes
me,
time,
but,
and if he
but,
never gets
but,
there, then that's one thing.
Well,
but,
see,
you know,
Spike Lee never had the success that Tyler Perry has does from a financial standpoint. He's already in a position that if he wanted to, and that's up to him, if he wanted to, he could go outside the box and do something different because he's at a different point financially than Spike Lee was even after Spike. Right now, at the Spike Lee's career, he's still not on the level that Tyler Perry is, and he's been in the game longer.
Financially. Right.
Spike Lee has problems getting his movies funded.
I think artistically, yeah. Spike Lee is far beyond what
I agree with that.
But financially, I think Tyler had a very different kind of like.
Hey, Roby, you're breaking up, and we got to move on. So thanks for your call.
Thanks, Roby.
Dev, you ready to move on to our main topic?
We're about to talk about our main topic of the night, which is homosexuality in sports. We call it homosexual in the locker room. And we have a very special guest that's going to join us for this conversation. She is the CEO of Highest Self, LLC. She has a clothing line, Little Foxes, which is distributed by Pinup Girl Clothing. She has her own jewelry line, which is pronounced McKende. She has her own charitable foundation, which is called Fox's Charity Organization. And she is Trashy Lingerie's top model and Pinup Girl clothing model. And we are a couple of shallow guys. So the icing on the cake for us is that she's also a former Playboy bunny. We'd like to welcome into the war room Davida Sullivan. Hey, Davida.
Davida, what's up?
That was lucky. You guys are excited about the Playboy Bunny part. That's great.
Man, our lines were blowing up on the Tyler Perry talk. We're way overboard here.
I know. I was over here like, oh, my God, I have to bite my tongue. Yeah, right,
well, thank you for holding on and waiting for us, and thank you for being with us tonight.
And Davida, we appreciate your action in the chat room as well. Shout out to the chat room.
Right.
Of course.
Now, before we move on into our topic that you're going to help us out with, I've already, you know, I've given the names and everything, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? You know, how everything you've done, being, you know, a Playboy bunny and stuff like that, how that shaped who you are now, where you're going, and I guess you can elaborate a little more on the businesses that I just named.
Well, it's interesting, and I think one thing that I've learned over the years, I came out here from Kentucky almost 11 years ago, and I was just a diehard thespian, kind of hippie. I mean, I was always in, like, long dresses, and it was just, I would go to the ocean at like 2 a.m. I was just one of those kind of like different kind of girls, nonconformist, and I really did not want to get into modeling. I was very, very much against it. I'm like, those girls are so stupid. All they do is look good. They don't talk. They don't, you know, that kind of thing. And then finally, some years back, I just, you know, I started taking modeling jobs because it was like I was always getting called for it. And it's really led me into my purpose in life. And so the lesson that I've learned is, you know, sometimes you have an idea of this is what I want to do, this is what I love, but, you know, sometimes the universe has another way of getting you there. But if you're kind of fighting against it, you know what I mean? And women, we do that, you know, the whole strong black woman thing. You know, you don't want to all that nonsense, which is nonsense. That's one of my biggest pet peeves. But yeah, modeling with Trashy. Actually, that's how I met my partners. She's partners with me for Fox's charity organization and McKinney and Be Your Highest Self. Her name's Mickey Black. She's a model as well. And then the clothing line. I started off modeling for them, and I said, you know, I have all these ideas. I want a clothing line. And she was like, get me some samples, and if we like it, you'll have a line. So wow. Everything that I'm doing now has kind of been, it's happened since after I modeled and all the, you know, the different connections and stuff and business connections and everything. So I'm really grateful for that, and I'm excited that I'm modeled now. But I could not do the Playboy Bunny thing, being in that outfit for hours, and it takes two people to get into that thing.
I don't think the audience, they probably don't know that there's a difference between a Playboy Bunny and a Playboy Playmate. Playmates are the ones who does nudity. DaVita she did not do nudity when she was affiliated with Playboy, just throwing that out there. Let everybody know. Now your charitable foundation.
Pictures out there.
What is your foundation? Mm-hmm. What is your foundation?
The charity organization, we started off doing kind of just a wide range of things, stuff for the environment, homeless families, AIDS projects, things like that. We now kind of have narrowed down our focus to the arts, and so we help missions, schools, homes, and shelters. We take the artwork of amateur artists, as well as the artworks of the students themselves that are currently enrolled in K-12 school systems. And we use the proceeds from the card sales to go back to the schools or missions or shelters themselves.
Okay, that sounds great. And before we get you off the air, we'll give out all of the contact information for that. But before we jump into this topic, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, what's your favorite sport?
Horseback riding.
Horseback riding.
I love to ride horses.
All right, so that'll be a good segue into our thing, because we don't know anything about horseback riding. All right, everybody, just feel free to chime in. Homosexuality in the locker room. I'll just pose the question. Everybody will just have a roundtable discussion. Do you all feel that an athlete, quote-unquote, coming out during the career is a smart thing to do? Jimmy?
You said during their career?
Yeah. Do you think it's smart to come out during your career?
It's a shame to say, but no, it's not. It's just because I think that it does a bigger disservice than it does. See, I think that more should, and it will become more accepted, but because of the society we live in at this point, I don't see it being good for their career. Right. Hopefully one day we can get to a point where, you know, it's a norm and who cares, but right now, to be honest with you, I don't.
Well, but that's how you get to that point.
It takes someone to get you there, and I totally agree with you.
Some,
I totally agree.
Right.
But just
some
to answer
pioneers.
His question, like, you know,
at this point, you're just saying it's not smart. But I understand DaVita's point, because in every aspect of life where something needs to change, there has to be some pioneer.
Who is the catalyst? Yeah.
It has to be a trailblazer. But to answer your question was, would it be smart for their career? Would it be smart overall? Yes. But for their personal career, no, because they would, in a sense, be a martyr. Now, when you say smart for their career, do you mean financially, or do you mean over the long term is how they'll be remembered?
No, I'm just talking, not even the long term, the short term, how they'll probably get treated by their teammates,
You know what?
Fans.
I think it partly depends on the actual sport, too. Because
right.
I think, like you said, in the locker room, you know, for example, I mean, not to be, you know, to poke fun or anything, but for example, if a guy was a figure skater and he came out, I don't think he would see the same type of even media uproar as it would be as if, I mean, obviously he doesn't have a locker room to go back into. But there wouldn't be the same type of media uproar or publicity that it would be as if it was, for example, a football player or a sport that's perceived to be more masculine, to be more, you know, focused and not, you know, open to, you know, any type
like
of
with the
non-masculine
skater,
type of
with the stereotype,
like yeah.
People would expect that anyway.
Sure.
Right.
To buttress that point that where Brother TJ was going, I do not think it would be smart at this stage where society is at large. As we've all agreed, it takes a trailblazer, it takes a martyr. Speaking from the perspective of a former collegiate athlete and former high school athlete, I can say that for me, sexuality does not belong in the locker room, period. So when somebody comes out, it brings that into the locker room and it breaks sort of a sacred barrier. No matter what I'm doing in a locker room, that's the only situation where I can be intimate in terms of friendship, in terms of who my teammates are, without anything of a sexual nature being involved. So once you say, okay, I've come out, society and the mentality of most people on that team isn't prepared for that, and you brought sexuality into the locker room at that point. DeVita, what are your thoughts?
I have too many. I have a lot. It upsets me a lot. I mean, to my core, just the state of, you know, that we're in as far as dealing with homosexuality just in general. So, of course, in sports, you know, it's unfortunate because there are a lot of gay athletes. There's a lot. And it just adds to, you know, the secretive. My thing is as far as, you know, I think that everyone should feel comfortable and be able to be who they are, period. And it would change everything. I mean, just if we're talking sports, and, you know, of course, African-Americans, you know, we're kind of like, we're significant, right? And the fact that HIV and AIDS is just running so I mean, our numbers, our percentages, not just double, like triple, quadruple other races, you know, in having the virus. And, you know, part of that, my belief, is because people don't feel comfortable enough to say that they're gay or that they're bi or whatever. And so it causes all these other things, and especially in the Black community. And I think in sports, if someone's gay, a football player, a basketball player, I was trying to find, like, stats on, you know, openly gay football players and basketball players and athletes. And I mean, there's, like, it's none. You know, there's been a few over the years, but, you know, one tried to commit suicide and wasn't successful, and it's just sad. It's sad and unfortunate. The reality is there are gay athletes, there are gay policemen, there are, in anything, in any profession in the world, there are gay people, and those people should feel comfortable being who they are, and they should be able to say, this is who I am, and it should not be a big deal, and we should move on from it, you know? And they shouldn't be having to, like, live on the down low and, you know, hide who they are, trying to live a straight lifestyle to, you know, for appearances, but then that's how diseases get spread around. I don't understand why no one is, you know, why it's such a big deal.
Let me play a clip for you guys. A few years ago, a former basketball player. Now he, you know, his situation isn't really. It really doesn't fit our question because he didn't come out while he was playing. But a former basketball player, John Amici, came out and said he was gay. And at the time, former player Tim Hardaway was actually working as an analyst on television. He was asked on the Dan Le Batard show about gay people in general and about John Amici. So I'm going to play two clips, but the first one I'm going to play, after we hear that, I'm going to bring the conversation a little more personal and ask you guys a question, and then when we get into the second clip, I'm actually going to ask you about his comment. So after this first one, you don't have to comment on Tim Hardaway, but just listen to what he had to say.
First of all, I wouldn't want him on my team, and second of all, you know, if he was on my team, I would, you know, really distance myself from him because I don't think that's right, and, you know, I don't think that you know, he should be in a locker room while we're in a locker room. And it's just a whole lot of other things. So I wouldn't even be a part of that. But, you know, it's stuff like that going on, and there's a lot of other people out here like that that's still in the closet and don't want to come out the closet. But, you know, I just leave that alone.
All right, so that was Tim Hardaway's first response to Dan Levitard's first question. It actually gets worse. But let's bring it a little more personal, since I know all of you guys played, you know, some sports during your lifetime, and you've had that, like Brad was saying, that intimate locker room experience, you know, on a friend level, on a teammate level. How would you guys feel, and Davida, you could chime in too, because I know, you know, you've been around other models and things like that. How would you guys feel if there was someone in your locker room that was openly gay? Like, would it make you uncomfortable? PJ, you want to start off?
Me personally? Nah, it wouldn't. It wouldn't make me uncomfortable. Like, he's gay. He does what he wants to do. That's not none of my business. If he's a good teammate, if he can help our team win, really that's all that matters. But back to what Brad alluded to, I'm also somebody that doesn't believe that sexuality belongs in the locker room. So if he was the type of guy, or he was making, say, for example, making sexual advances at another guy who was not gay, then, you know, I would have an issue with that, because that would just probably make the locker room uncomfortable. But, hey, like, you know, he does his thing. That's what he does. I have no problem with that. I mean, you know, we're there to play basketball. It's not a thing that we need to be talking about our sex lives. So,
yeah, I wouldn't
have a problem with it.
I agree with your point, because I think when it comes to homosexual people, I think straight people always feel that someone is looking at them or worried about them. Like, they have this misconception that every gay person, you know, just wants everyone that they see of the same sex. Now, I don't understand how people would believe that to be true, because, okay, if you're walking around and you're a straight guy, well, I'm not even going to use a guy because we do want everything we see. If you're walking around and you're a straight girl, you don't want every guy that you see. So it's like, why do people who are really homophobic, why do they think that every guy that they see that's gay wants them on some level? That's what I don't understand.
Right. I mean, like I said, we deal with gay people all the time, and we might not necessarily know. I mean, I have gay clients, and the business and the projects don't go any different than with straight clients, because it's business. We handle our business. We have to do, and, you know, we move on. So it's the same situation. I think, like, right now, there are a lot of homosexual people in the world, and, I mean, at this point, you know, if you're not having sex with them, I mean, excuse me being frank, but if you're not having sex with them, what difference does it make?
Any other thoughts on that question? Go ahead, Davida.
Well, I'll weigh in real quick. This is Jimmy. To answer your question in terms of would it bother me, I have to be honest, since we're in the war room. If you would have asked me this when I was younger, you would have got a different response, because, you know, it was all about ignorance.
Right.
You know, the influences in my life were raised by some, you know, old heads. And, you know, in terms of what I was taught, that, you know, I was taught one thing. But as you get older, you learn and you grow. And you realize that, you know, people are who they are, you know. And I agree with what Davida said. People should be able to be themselves. So at this point in my life in the locker room, it wouldn't bother me, because I don't think that, you know, what your sexual preference is even belongs in the locker room. But if you would have asked me this question, say, 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, you probably would have got a different response, if we're being honest. But
the more
you grow as a person and learn, you know, the more you realize that, you know, things change.
Jim,
yeah.
I feel you, because – I'm sorry, Davida. Go ahead. I'll save it.
No, I was just saying basically that I agree, and that it's, you know, it's just – it's so unfortunate for anybody – for you to not be able to be who you are. I mean, you have to be able to try and put yourself in someone else's shoes. You know, like, if you are a man and you're attracted to women, I'm a woman, I'm attracted to men, right? If I had to hide that, if that causes not being able to say what you are and be what you are causes more issues than we'll ever realize. It has extreme significance and extreme importance, because it comes out in other ways. There are things that that we probably don't even realize, that we're thinking, what does homosexuality have to do with this or have to do with that, when you have a large group of people who are hiding who they really are and who cannot be who they are, you're going to have issues and you're going to have problems. So socially, yeah. Spiritually, it's just, you know, it's best if everybody, and how does that start? Of course, with, you know, an athlete being able to say, yeah, I'm gay, after, you know, an actor being able to say that I'm gay, because then it helps these young people that are out here, and they're, you know, yeah, they might even have friends that are accepting of them, but there's not anyone, you know, in a place of power or anything like that that they can relate. It's going to make them feel ashamed of who they are.
Well, like to Jimmy's point, like I totally agree with what he said. I'm kind of glad that he brought that up, because actually a few of us played basketball together in high school. Now, I can imagine how this conversation would have gone down in that locker room. And
it definitely
would have been full of ignorance, and it would have been nothing like the conversation that's going on right now. So I'm glad that Jimmy actually brought that up, because I fully agree with you that you would get a different answer from me back in the young, ignorant days. But look, I'm going to play the second clip from Tim Hardaway, and then I'm going to get everybody's opinions on his comments. We're going to talk strictly about him. So this is the second question that Dan Le Batard asked him.
What could you do? You don't have a recourse. You ask for a trade?
Yeah, I asked for him to get traded. You know, one another, or if something has to give, and I think the majority of the players would ask for him to be traded, or they would want to get traded.
But you'd be trading him to a team where he probably wouldn't be wanted there either, I would imagine.
Right, that is true. I just buy him out his contract and let him go.
You know that what you're saying there, though, Timmy, is flatly homophobic, right? It's just it's bigotry.
Well, you know, I hate gay people, so you know, I let it be known. I don't like gay people. I don't like to be around gay people. I don't, you know, I'm homophobic. I don't
yeah,
like it. It shouldn't be in the world for that, or in the United States for it. So yeah, I don't like it.
Wow, DeVita, what do you? What do you think about his comments, Tim Hardaway? By the way, he lost his job for these comments, but go ahead.
I think he might have been molested.
yo, I think the same thing. I said, yo, for him to be that angry, yo, it must be something personal going on there. He must have,
I got a friend, and he is, like, the worst. Like, he don't like white people, gay people. He's crazy. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, you act like you know you were born, like, 200 years ago or something. And
yeah,
he cannot stand. He's like, what would you say, you know, if your son was gay? He was like, I'd never talk to him again. I'll never talk to him again. I'm like, what?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, like, for real. But so I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, and I was like, why is he like that? And he was like, you know, he spent some time in prison, right? I was like, yeah.
There's always a backstory when you feel that strongly. Like, my opinion of Tim Hardaway's comments, I have, like, I'm a proponent for honesty. I don't like when people go into, especially athletes, when they go into the media and they say what they think the media wants to hear from them. But in this case, I think his comments were extremely ignorant. He could have gotten the same point across without using some of the words and some of the language that he used. You know, go ahead, Brett.
I said there was no tact. T-E-E needs a medium flash.
Right. Yeah. I heard him, though.
Like, seriously?
Yeah.
However, his feelings, I think that reflects what would be pervasive amongst most athletes even today. I think that he's not the exception. I think that he stood up and spoke his mind, whereas most would have toned it down. But I don't think that what he said is out of the ordinary. What do you guys think?
No, I agree with you 100%. Like I was saying, I think that may be the sentiment of a lot of people. I just think Tim Hardaway could have found a way to articulate that a little bit better. But
then when
why was he talking about that in the first place? I'm so confused.
He was asked because, like I prefaced before the video, a former NBA player had come out and said he was gay. So the interviewer actually asked him about it, and he went crazy. And that was
the guy's demise. The guy
so
had retired
on NBA
point.
TV since. Yeah,
the guy had retired at the point and came out of the closet after he was done playing, and he pretty much said that he was, you know, afraid to come out while he was playing, so he waited till he was finished playing and came out the closet, and that was the response from some of his ex-players.
Still got rope.
That's so insane.
Yeah.
It definitely is. Well, we're running out of time, but I want to ask you a question. Do you think that we will ever get to a point where we will be more accepting, and do you think that being homophobic will be looked back, because I've heard someone say that in, you know, in the future, it'll be looked back just like it was, you know, as racism. It'll be looked the same way, like, wow, we used to do that. Do you think we'll ever get to that point?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I mean, I've always been at that point, and, you know, I'm not from a large city where, you know what I mean, I'm from the South or from the country, you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's going to take some visionaries to, you know, to help change it. But I do think that things will definitely change. I just wish everybody that was gay would, like, come out, like, just for a day. And then, everybody would just shut up. And it would change everything, because they would see that these stereotypes and stuff is for, you know, for gay men or gay women or whatever are completely, you know, unfounded. I mean, there are some things that you can say, yes, okay, they fit the stereotype, but, man, like, if everybody that I know for a fact, like, seeing with my own eyes that, you know, are in the media, you know what I'm saying, that has,
yeah,
crazy, change, everybody would just have to shut up, you know, and things
yeah,
would
Jim,
change. Yeah,
Jim, I think definitely someday it'll be a thing of the past. I mean, you said racism. I mean, racism is always going to exist, but I know where you were going with that.
So
you know,
I guess the same thing, yeah, it'll be the same way.
Yeah, I think we'll get past it, because if you see now, it's a lot of progress being made. Sometimes I kind of feel like they're throwing it in our faces a lot. Every sitcom has at least one gay character. Every reality show has at least one gay character. So, it's like, they're throwing it in the mix little by little to try to get everybody to be a little more accepting. But DaVita.
Yeah.
Before we go off, because we're running out of time, before we get you off, we're going to ask you to tell everybody how they can get, you know, how they can find your stuff online. What's your website address for your companies?
Sure. BeYourHighestSelf.org is the main website, which will link into everything else. But you can find the clothing at pinupgirlclothing.com, the jewelry. Jewelry is mckinde.com, that's mikinde.com, and Fox's organization is foxescharity.org. And I think that's everything.
Right. Well, we would like to thank you so much for joining us tonight. You know, once in a while, we do the serious topics on here. There's probably some people out there shell-shocked because they're used to us being silly and or just giving them the sport straight up. We'll be back to doing that next week, everybody. But for now, we want to thank DaVita for joining us in the war room tonight. We loved it, and we would love to have you back.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to come back.
Thanks, DaVita. We appreciate
horses.
It.
We need to
all
talk
right.
about horses.
All right, we're going to talk about horses next time. All right, DaVita.
Thanks, DaVita.
A lot.
All right.
Well,
everybody out there, we'd like to thank you for joining us in the war room this evening. We hope you all enjoyed tonight's show. We want to send a very special thanks to tonight's guest, DaVita Sullivan, for joining us in our discussion. Don't forget to check out DaVita's website, beyourhighestself.org, to keep up with everything she is doing. And please join us next week, same time, same place, for our special Thanksgiving Day episode of the War Room. That's right.
Yep.
We will still be on. Set up the laptop and speakers and put this on for your whole family to hear. Will be your dinner music. We'll discuss the results from week 11 of the NFL season and recap and preview all the Thanksgiving Day NFL and NBA matchups. We'll also go down memory lane and discuss some of the most memorable Turkey Day football moments ever. We hope to hear some of yours as well. Most importantly, and as usual, we'll get you caught up on all the biggest sports stories of the week. And make sure you join us again. Thanksgiving dinner is next week, and we will be broadcasting, so join us that day. Until then, we will holler.
Holla, holla.